Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Elizabeth is the CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, a leading multimedia provider of lifestyle content. The Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. It's where you'll find inspirational and encouraging stories, advice, and information with our radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Real people, real advice, real places, real products and businesses, real life stories, and more, including real celebrity life. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You. Now, here's your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Okay, so to all of that, we're going to add Keep It Real with politics today, which is, you guys know me, politics is... Yeah, well, so far in 3.5 years of owning Best Ever You, we've steered clear of politics. So, Justin, Shanette, you get to steer us in the right direction politically. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're real excited to have you with us. Before we get going, I want to mention that we're featured on Blog Talk Radio again today for the second day in a row with Eileen Davidson. She's an actress on The Young and the Restless. She plays Ashley Abbott. And so we're featured again on there today. We're in two spots. We're under Today's Picks and Featured Radio. And so that's a really big honor. And the past couple shows we've done have all been featured on Blog Talk Radio. So, yay, go Best Ever You. So thank you all for listening and retweeting the shows and following us on Twitter at Best Ever You. And now we get to follow Justin on Twitter at Justin Shanette, which let me spell your last name for people following. Let me spell the whole thing. It's you're on Twitter, J-U-S-T-I-N. There's no underbar, right? Just Justin Shanette,
correct.
Right? Okay, so J-U-S-T-I-N-C-H-E-N-E-T-T-E. So you can follow him on Twitter. He's also on Facebook. And you're running for office. Holy wow,
yes.
You're running for office. Now, you don't seem old enough to run for office.
Yeah, I'm only 20 years old at this point. By the time the primary comes around, I will be 21, which is the eligibility age requirement. So, yes, I am very young, but I think my message that I'm going to be talking to voters all across my district and all across Maine will resonate, because I think really people are frustrated with what's going on in Augusta and really what's going on in the country right now when it comes to politics, and a lot of people may not be fully aware of what's really taking place, and I think it's really time that we have an advocate that fights for our interests on Main Street, and I think people will see beyond my spiky hair and my age to see, okay, hey, this person not only has experience but is really passionate about fighting for our interests.
You know, that's the one thing that I just love about you. I do have to say this because you are really young. I mean, you're 22 years younger than I am. But you are. I mean, really, you could pretty much, I have a child almost as old as you. I mean, really. And, you know, what strikes me about you is just, you're intelligent and you get it. You put the pieces together. And, you know, I'm so thankful to you for a number of things that you've done to help boost my career. So I can only imagine the things that you're going to do take it out 25 years from now. I'm fascinated by you. You're definitely one to watch and follow. Tell me a little bit about how long you've been involved with, you know, all these different things in your life, because it seems like you've started at a very, very young age.
Yeah, I think I started back when I was 11 years old. My stepfather ran for school board in Florida. And at the time, I mean, if you take a look at any 11-year-old or anybody that's at that age, you know, their first interest isn't going to be going around and getting petitions signed for their parents. It's, you know, watching cartoons on Nickelodeon or worrying about what their next meal is going to be. You know, that's their priority. It's not, you know, campaigning. And so at first I was really kind of just getting introduced to it, but I really caught on and I really had this passion for putting up campaigns. pain signs, talking to people about issues. You know, I was a very strong advocate for kind of educational opportunities when I was younger. I really wanted to make sure that, you know, what I was getting and what my fellow peers were getting in terms of, you know, their opportunities in education, that were the, it was going to be the best for us so that we can succeed in the real world. And, you know, this was just little old me. I was so small for my age, and I was just, you know, talking to adults like it was nothing. And yeah, that kind of set myself apart from the rest of my peer group because they may have not had the same priorities, but it really sparked my interest for, you know, public service and trying to help people. And so from that point on, I had, you know, that seed planted in the back of my mind that, you know what, you know, maybe this is what I want to do. And it kind of shifted as the years progressed from you know, the political scene to more of the, okay, I want to hold politicians accountable for their actions and inactions, what they say and what they don't say. So I wanted to do more TV-oriented things, more TV yeah. journalism. So that's where I really kind of started, was, you know, starting to have, you know, a political forum show where we'd invite politicians and candidates on to talk about the substantive issues. And from that, it kind of spiraled into, you know, wanting to serve my state. I was appointed on the Maine State Board of Education as the first student ever by the governor at the time, Governor John Baldacci. And yep. that in and of itself was a great learning experience.
That was in 2008,
and which I'm sure,
right?
That was, yeah, 2008. Yeah, 2008, 2009. I served a 16-month term there. And that actually discouraged me from politics, believe it or not, because as a young person to see what was going on behind the scenes, the things that people don't really see, it's not covered in the media, it actually discouraged me from the political process, and it made me want to be a journalist, actually, more than a politician, because I saw the political bickering that went back and forth in Augusta. You know, politicians were more concerned about scoring political points and more about the D and the R after someone's name than actually getting down to brass tacks and solving the real problems at hand. And they really kind of shoved off, you know, my viewpoints because I was a young person. I was a student, right? And a lot of times when politicians are kind of used to the same old environment, when a young person comes along that's very gung-ho and passionate about,
they're,
you know,
annoyed.
What's happening in the world around them, they're going to be like, I don't think so. I think we're going to need to quiet you and make sure you don't, you know, you need to follow lockstep with the structure, with the good old boy system that plagues the Capitol. And I found that in my whole life, that a lot of times there's this ageism card that's played, you know, with young people, and that's really sad because we really do need to be getting young people engaged in the process because that's where it starts.
Yeah. We're getting a little audio reverb on the phone. I don't know what that is exactly, but just so you know, I don't know what that is. We're getting a little bit of audio quality distortion, so I don't know why,
okay.
But we'll I'll try and see if I can figure it out on my end here. But anyway, yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I can see a bunch of, you know, 50 or 60-year-old, maybe 40-year-old people sitting up there and you coming along and just I can see them discrediting you, thinking, you know, you're too gung-ho. How do you not get frustrated? How do you keep yourself focused and not frustrated? Because I could honestly see that being probably a really frustrating part of the job. Can you hear me? I wonder if the phone, Justin, if you can hear me, if you want to just dial back in. I thought maybe your phone might be low battery or something, but we'll cover here for a minute. Let me go with his background. Justin Chenette, he's a graduate of Thornton Academy, and he holds a degree in TV news from Lyndon State College, and he is a member of the Maine State Board of Education. He was appointed by Governor Baldacci, and he currently works for Fox 23, and I'm gonna pull him back in on the phone here. Hang on. He currently works for Fox 23 as a production as a producer for the morning show. I thought maybe your phone was dying. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Yeah, I thought maybe you were low battery. So we covered with a little bit of your bio here. Let me finish reading what I was reading. You work for Fox 23 as an assistant morning producer of Good Day Maine. And then do you still have this show on WPXTWPME? Do you have the statewide public affairs show Youth in Politics still airing there?
Yes, Sundays actually at 7 a.m. and Mondays at 8:30 a.m., yes.
All right. So I was asking you, you know, let's say you're elected and you head up to Augusta and there are a bunch of 40, 50, 60-year-old people in the room and they see you coming. How do you not get frustrated by all of the red tape that's there?
Well, I'll give you an example of my past to kind of put that into perspective. I was interviewing a politician on one of my shows while in high school, and we were talking about, I think, health care reform at the time. And in my conversations, this was a person who was running for state representative, and she basically, at the end of our heated debate, because we clearly disagreed on the issue, she basically said, "Oh, how old are you?" And I was like, I was 17. And she said, "Oh, well, you can't vote yet. So why does your opinion matter?" And it really stuck in my mind of the mentality in our political system today. Like, what we should be focusing on is not the age, but preparing students for the rigors and challenges of the real world. I mean, just because you turn that magic number of 18 doesn't mean you're going to clearly know or have a firm understanding of our government or our political process and want to be civically engaged. There's no light switch that turns on. We need to be prepping students beforehand. And for so long, we actually have not had a civics education requirement in our schools throughout the state of Maine. You know, when I was at Thornton Academy, we had a political science class, but it was a voluntary elective. It was not a mandatory class. Mm. So out of a class of, let's say, 350 students, only 40 that graduated actually took a class that tried to make them have a firm understanding of how our government operated. And that is a real telltale of what's happening not only across the state, but across the country when in terms of civics education. And we wonder why more people are concerned about electing their next American idol versus American president. And that's really the sad part, because politicians then take that and that uneducated populace and try to manipulate them into steering them into a D or an R category and voting lockstep and supporting their policies that for a lot of us on Main Street have negatively affected us. And so that's why it's so important to have civics education.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, even at my age, I don't think it really matters what age you're at. I agree with you. Mm. It's confusing, though. Politics are confusing. And I honestly couldn't tell you even at my age whether I am a Democrat or a Republican in a way, because the issues are so confused. Do you?
They are.
It's hard
to tell. And a lot of people that I speak to, you know, and even for myself, you know, I tell people, you know, I'm running as a Democrat, but I'm really running as an independent spirit because that's really what Maine is. I mean, a lot of Mainers, too, have this independent mindset, which is great. But I've met people along the campaign trail and in my workings with the Democratic Party where people will vote just based on the D or the R after someone's name, but they'll go through a ballot, and just because you're a Democrat, you're going to vote all Democrat, or just because you're a Republican, you're going to vote all Republican. And if they actually take a look and spend some time to do their homework and research those particular candidates, they may actually find they disagree with them most of the time. And so it's so important to understand that, you know, especially because politics is so confusing, it really is, and a lot of times it's the politicians that make it even more confusing, that it's really, yeah, it shouldn't be about the D or the R, because a lot of people don't know. And it's really about, okay, let's take a look at the actual substantive issues and see where do you lie. I mean, we really need, especially for local politics, it should be less about party and more about who's going to fight for what you believe in. And by taking a look at economic policy, taking a look at how we're going to reform our education system, taking a look at health care, taking a look at energy, and breaking down those local issues and sometimes national issues, we can then say, okay, who best is going to serve me and stand up for what I believe in Augusta every single day? And that's what people need to take a look at in every election cycle. And it should be the job of the media to hold them accountable and to kind of cipher through all of that, but they may not be able to do that with their, you know, 10-second soundbite. You know, it's great that we have programs like this that we can really delve into some of the issues, but that's not always the case. And so people need to, you know, make sure they go on campaign websites like mine, justinforsacco.com, and others to really say, okay, this person, I really believe in their message. Maybe they're going to do a good job for me, or maybe they won't. and having that dialogue before the election takes place, I think, is so critically important.
So to educate us, what is okay? So you are running for state representative for SACO 134. I don't even know if I got that right. So I think I did,
yes,
or
you did.
I at least got it, you know, close. Tell me what that. Tell us all what that is, and how, you know, how many steps removed are we going to be from Governor Justin? Because I know you're going there somewhere.
Well, state representative, basically, I'd be one out of a lot of representatives in Augusta that basically formulates the policies that affect you in your daily life. So that could mean we support, tax incentives to small businesses so they can succeed on main streets everywhere, not even just in SACO, but in Portland and in Presque Isle, all across Maine. You know, supporting, you know, small businesses is so critically important because 65% of all the jobs that have been created over the last 17 years have come from small businesses. And so that's just one. I mean, if we take a look at our education system, you know, what happens in Augusta is, as a state representative, I would be formulating the actual policy to say, okay, we need, like this passed in the last legislative cycle, passed a civics requirement for our education in our high schools. So that actually was a law that was passed by the legislature, but it was developed by an individual state representative. And so those are the sorts of things that I would be doing in Augusta, is actually formulating the policy and helping to draft those policies that would then become law that would actually hopefully help people like you and me on Main Street. And that's so critically important. And so that's what – I mean, it's hard to kind of decipher what the actual job responsibilities are, but it is – according to them, it's a part-time responsibility, but I feel like it's definitely a full-time job to represent not only the people in SACO, but again, it's a state representative. So you're basically saying that you represent all of Maine when you're going to Augusta and making sure you're fighting for them each and every day. And so when you mention Governor Justin, I'm like, my interest isn't to be a career politician. You know, I'm just frustrated like so many other people, especially as a young person, seeing so many young people leave the state either for educational purposes or because it's too expensive to live here or because there's not enough jobs around town. You know, and that frustrates me because I really do want to stay in Maine and raise a family and be able to afford a home and to have health care and retire with dignity and financial stability. That's the American dream, and I feel like the American dream is slowly but surely eroding away based on the failed leadership, not only in our capital, but also in our nation's capital. And I feel compelled to get involved. I can't sit on the sidelines anymore and allow these politicians to throw my future away. And that's why I'm running for office, and that's why I hope people support me, because I'm equally as frustrated with what is happening.
Yeah. Do you think... Okay, I hate cans of worms, but I'm going to open one. We're opening a can of worms. You ready, Justin?
Okay.
All right.
Yes, I'm
Let's
ready.
Let's go. Okay. With what we okay, and again, I am probably the least political person you're ever going to talk to in your life, which is good because, you know, that's probably a good representation of a lot of people, because politics is kind of scary, and I also feel like if you take a wrong stance, you can alienate people. So I'm it wishy-washy with politics sometimes. Do you think that the governor, the current governor of Maine, he is getting just attacked all of the time? Is that part of the job? Is he really doing a bad job? Is he doing a good job? What's your take on what's going on currently in the state of Maine? Because it doesn't – I'm not getting that cushy, happy, warm feel I got with, you know, the previous administration, where because I'm not from here, and you know we moved here from California in 2004, and you know I've done some things as Mrs. Maine, and I've been appointed by Mrs. Baldacci for Maine Reads, and more. I felt like they were more almost like your neighbor in office.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? Does that make sense?
Right.
I don't know.
And I a lot of people are feeling the exact same way, is that it's very divisive right now, what's happening
yeah.
in Augusta. And it's not, I don't think it's necessarily just one person in particular. I mean, even when we had Governor John Baldacci, who was a Democrat, I still felt like it was a very partisan environment.
Mm-hmm.
Privately, John Baldacci was a very partisan person, maybe publicly too, but I've worked with him on a private level, and he's a very partisan person. And so is Governor LePage from the opposite political spectrum. I do feel like one of the major hindrances to actually solving the real problems at stake is the political bickering back and forth. The he said, she said, I'm going to stab you in the back because it's going to look good for me for the next election. And I'm like, who cares? Who cares about the next election?
I wish everybody understood. That's like one of the reasons why I can't stand politics, because it's
right.
like, oh, annoying. Enough with, you know, all the, it's like a constant game of bickering. That's a great way to put it. Like a constant mm-hmm. game of my way is better. Or that I wish there was a candidate that, you know, kind of like you, who's saying, you know, enough already. Let's repeat those five, I think it was five or six things that you said to me. Because I heard you say it on an interview once before, and it ends with retire with dignity, and it starts with something else. Can you go through what you stand for again one more time? I just want to make sure everybody hears it.
Well, I there's three very simple things. We need to rethink priorities, reform policy, and renew commitment. And by doing so, we can actually find out what people on Main Street want. Like, for instance, being able to raise a family here, to own a house, to have quality health care, to retire with dignity and financial stability. Then we can reform the policies in Augusta to reflect those new set of priorities that you want on Main Street. And by doing so, we can renew the commitment with what a representative democracy is all about. True representation, advocating for our interests, having somebody up in Augusta fighting for what we believe in, and not caring if you have a D or an R at the end of your name, not caring who's in office and who's doing what. That basically what we're doing is, here's a problem, here are some potential solutions, let's have a dialogue about your ideas and mine and start getting down to brass tacks and solving them.
Yeah. Now, okay, I'm going to ask another completely naive and ignorant question. You ready? Does everything that you just said sort of make you more along the lines of Tea Party, or is Tea Party completely something else? And I know the answer a little bit also, but I want to make sure people understand what that means too, because there's this whole new thing called Tea Party out there. And people are like, yeah, okay, that's great, but what the heck is it exactly?
I'm definitely not Tea Party. Tea Party tends to lean very conservative, maybe some would say even more radically libertarian, like a radical mm-hmm. libertarian, in terms of – not me at all. I consider myself kind of an independent moderate. You know, yes, I'm registered as a Democrat because I believe in the democratic principles of, you know, equal justice for all and some of those core democratic social issues. But from a fiscal standpoint, I tend to be a little conservative on that. But again, and that's what really makes me more independent. Now, the Tea Party is an interesting movement. I like the idea of people getting involved in the process and voicing their frustrations. So from the standpoint of like Occupy, Wall Street movement, Tea Party, these sorts of movements, I really like the idea of participating in our democracy, and I encourage it. I disagree, however, with some of the ideas that are coming from it, but that's okay. And that's really what I'm trying to kind of put forward in my campaign, is that it's not about me telling you what it should be. It's about having a conversation about some of the problems and some potential solutions and having a kind of a back and forth and hopefully, you know, developing something that works for everybody. But the Tea Party tends to believe in less government, significantly less government, in mm-hmm. terms of cutting certain services, and I don't necessarily agree with a lot of that. I think, you know, we do need to take a red pen and go through DHHS education system and find any inefficiencies or administrative redundancy that may exist, unlike major cuts across the board like the LePage administration is wanting to do right now, with $100+ million being hopefully not being cut from DHHS, which would cause over close to 5,000 jobs being cut across the state of Maine, which would be a huge hindrance, not only from that perspective, but also seniors would have to make the difficult choice between heating their homes and buying prescription drugs. I mean, we already saw the federal government cutting emergency heating assistance for seniors 20 to 40% this coming year. And that's a problem because we have senior citizens who have worked their entire lives. They've worked so hard to get to the point where they can relax, they can enjoy life with their spouse and their family. And now we're saying, okay, we're going to cut some heating assistance because clearly you can't afford to heat your home. So what are you going to do? Well, that's your problem. And so it's these sorts of things that we need to definitely tackle. But again, getting back to the Tea Party and the Occupy, you know, Wall Street sort of movements, both of them are forged from the left or the right. So on both sides of the political spectrum, we have Occupy Wall Street is from the left, for the most part, progressive movement. And then we have from the conservative and the right, we have the Tea Party. Both tend to be a little bit more radical in their viewpoints, but are completely legitimate in their frustrations for how government is operating today. They just feel like they're shut out of the process for so long. Now they're screaming to make their voices heard, and they should be. Now, some of the way they're going about it might not necessarily be the most the most mainstream. I mean, obviously we're seeing that in a lot of cities. Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, occupying certain parks, I don't necessarily know if that's the best avenue. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think tasing them or spraying them with pepper spray is the best route to remove them either. And so we need to kind of find that equal balance. I definitely don't like when I see images on the screen of college students sitting and clearly not disrupting anything, getting pepper sprayed in the face. That is not something that I approve of. And that's not cool at all whatsoever, all these viral videos that we're seeing from these different protests. So we need to understand why they're protesting, what they're actually protesting, and having a conversation with them. I don't see politicians going down to Occupy Maine, for instance, and saying, okay, what are your problems and what can we do to help you? I don't see that taking place. I don't see that taking place in the Tea Party either. I mean, LePage has visited a lot of the Tea Party movements, but it's really just kind of a rallying cry for the conservatives. I'd really like to see sort of an actual dialogue, something productive coming out of these protests, not just the rah-rah shish-boom-bah group, but having politicians go down there and say, hey, why don't you go fix some problems? Why don't you have a conversation? Because those are your constituents too. And a lot of times we forget that, is that they are citizens of this country, hopefully, and they deserve to have their voices be heard. So go down there and see what the fuss is all about. See what you can do to help. And I think that's been lacking.
Yeah. Are you going to be – I'm just going to ask you this. Are you going to be voting for Obama, or do you want to see him be reelected, or do you want to see somebody else be reelected?
I'm disappointed with the Republicans that are currently running. And so, you know, in the conversations about the presidential race, you know, I have to, you know, take a more closer look at, you know, what they're presenting. But I've been watching very closely all of these Republicans. There seems to be so many Republican debates. Like every day there comes out a new one on some cable network. But it's good because we can kind of really see, you know, what Ron Paul's all about, what, you know, Governor Mitt Romney and Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, all these different individuals to see what they really believe in. I think Barack Obama is vulnerable from a political standpoint. He has made a lot of promises that he made in 2008 during his presidential run. I went to his I remember going to his rally as a high school student and felt so impressed by his kind of oratory skills. And I know that sounds like it shouldn't be the most important factor, but I was I felt so involved. Like he wanted my participation in democracy that I felt a part of something larger than his candidacy and larger than my life, that I felt like a part of history. And it wasn't just because he was the first African-American running for office, but because finally a politician cared enough to involve me in the process. And for so long, young people were clearly ignored. And that's why I supported Barack Obama in 2008. But I'm not so sure I want to support him in 2012. But, I mean, look at the alternatives. I mean,
you hit it right there. I mean, in our household, you know, my husband's an attorney, and he's a securities attorney, and we have these discussions. I'm a little bit more political than I lead on, but I don't know if I openly discuss it on my radio shows all the time. You know, I don't have a lot of political guests. But how do you describe that feeling of like having to go vote? And this is what happens to me almost every time. I'm just so discouraged. Every time I go in there, I don't have a clear candidate that I'm 1,000% for. It's always, I've settled for something. And I can't quite put my finger, I have some discussions with Ray Richardson on Fox every once in a while about what exactly I am, because what I am doesn't plug me into a Democrat or Republican category. It puts me out there somewhere in between. And there's no candidate that thinks the way I think. So I don't know what do I have to change my ways to fit in?
Well, I mean, and this is why I really approve of New Hampshire's system, because New Hampshire allows independents, registered independents, to vote in the primary. Maine, however, there's actually no independents. There's unenrolled for the primaries. And so if you are like yourself and myself, to be honest with you, because I wanted to register as an independent but couldn't.
Unregistered, I believe.
Unenrolled. Why do we have to call it unenrolled? Why can't we be registered independents and say, you know what, I don't care if I'm not affiliated with a D or an R, but I'd like to make a choice during primaries in particular, because that's when we're kind of shut out of the process if you're independent or unenrolled. You know, why can't we vote in a primary to say, you know what, I want a list of Democrats, I want a list of Republicans, I want a list of Greens, I want a list of all the people, and I make the choice of who to vote for, just like a general election would be. But I want to be able to do that in the primary, because there are a lot of people like yourself. There's actually more, if you actually look at the statistics in SACO alone, there's actually more unenrolled people than registered Democrats and Republicans combined. And so, and why is that? Because a lot of times it depends on what the election is. An unenrolled person might be able to say, you know what, I'm really feeling the line of Republicans this go around. I think I'm going to register as a Republican. Or I'm really feeling the Democrats' message this go around. I want to register as a Democrat. It affords them the freedom to make that choice. You know, as they get closer to the election, clearly they have a requirement to make their party known, you know, so on so many days beforehand. But, I mean, you know, I think there should be something that's changed in terms of modeling after the New Hampshire system. But I think your sentiments are the sentiments of a lot of people across Maine and across the country. Is like, I really don't fit in the confines of those particular political boxes that they want to put us in. But it's this idea that, you know, I really don't care about that. I really care about, okay, what's going to benefit me in my household? What can, you know, put more money in my paycheck at the end of the month? You know, what can I do to get more quality health care, or make sure that my kids or your kids can go to post-secondary education and afford it without taking hundreds of thousands of dollars of loans? You know, those are the conversations.
You know that? 2 years ago, I just paid off my student loans when they turned 40.
Congratulations. Well, congratulations, but sad. You know, it's sad that we even have to worry about that. I mean, my mom is still paying off her loans, and it's just really, at the end of the day, we have to take a look at what's our value of our education. You know, do we really value having a skilled workforce and to be able to compete in a global economy? And if we really value our education as education equals our future, then we have to make college affordable. I mean, I'm going to Linden State College right now. I'm wrapping up my time there, majoring in broadcasting, and it's still super expensive. I get a discount because it's a kind of a New England neighbor sort of program. The government kind of, you know, subsidizes that a little bit because the program doesn't exist in the state of Maine. But that's a prime example of how I have to go out of state for my education because the program isn't in the public education system here. And I see that time and time again. And it's so frustrating because I would love to stay in Maine for my education. I'd love to stay in Maine for a job. But those two things might not be afforded to me and so many other young people. And that needs to be a priority, because whether – doesn't matter if you're 5 or 50, the fact of the matter is we need a young workforce to have a sustaining economic future in the state of Maine. That should be priority number one for everybody, and it starts with our education system. You know, we like to talk about the economy a lot of times, but education has to be first and foremost, because without education, you're not going to have an economy. And so it's all tied. Education, economy, energy, healthcare, these are all tied within each other. It's like a domino effect. Once you affect one, it's going to affect the other. And so when we're dealing with the economic growth problem that we have in the state, like the fact that Forbes just recently named Maine the last state in the country,
for
our business.
3 years in a row. Oh.
Yes, exactly, for our business climate. Now, there's some questions about how they arrived at that particular number. But irrespective of whether or not Forbes was a little biased or Forbes, you know, there was a flaw in their polling data or their research, the fact of the matter is that can be a catalyst for the conversation of, is our business climate working? And I don't think it is. I don't think that sign that LePage put out by the highway that says open for business is working like he wanted it to. You know, a sign isn't going to drive business. What's going to drive business is lowered taxes, incentives for them to come here, lowered health care costs. What about energy? Our energy costs in the state of Maine are 30 to 33% higher than the national average. And we wonder why large corporations or businesses don't want to come here. I mean, that's outrageous. And so figuring out a way to make it work for them, we actually have to have a conversation with them. That's why I'm doing a small business tour, talking to people on Main Street. Hey, you own a small business. What could I do on the state level to make policies and laws work for you? Maybe cut down on the regulation, maybe lower taxes. I don't know, but clearly you're the expert at it because you're a small business owner. You tell me what you want, and let's start that dialogue about actually making it happen.
Do you... And I've lived in a lot of different places, and the one thing I notice about living here is that people seem, there seems to be a more overwhelming sense of struggle here. It doesn't seem to be a real thriving state. I can't quite put my finger on it either. My husband and I talk about this a lot, but we seem to be, sometimes I think it's the weather, just like it needs to be sunny out and people will be happier, but
right.
I don't know. It seems to me that there are a lot of people out of work, a lot of people unable to afford school. You know, I'm hearing you, and I'm trying to apply it to the reality of living here, and it really does seem that way. Is it all something we're imagining, or is that real? I mean, are there more people unemployed in this state, for example, than others, or are there any facts around that?
Well, I mean, the facts are that we're becoming a retirement state, and that stems from. And I hate to be a doom and gloom kind of scenario, but a lot of it stems from the fact that manufacturing plants have closed. You know, this idea like the old mills. Like we have a mill in Saco, Biddeford area along our river. It used to be thriving and used to actually make products in America, in small town America. We used to make products and we used to produce. And we're slowly and surely, not really slowly anymore, becoming a consumer-based economy, which means we like to buy a lot of products, but what products are we actually producing at the local level that we can actually see and touch? And more, we're seeing these major corporations taking, you know, like paper mills and different things and moving their companies to overseas markets like China and India because their labor is significantly cheaper when they don't have to pay their employees health care costs or they don't have to pay their employees what we would consider minimum wage, you know, they can get away with that and produce the same product but for way cheaper. For instance, Hershey moved its major factory out of Pennsylvania and moved it in Mexico. And why is that? Because it's cheaper to produce there. And that's sad. It really is because we now have all of these empty, vacant mills all across the state. And we have workers that need work because we don't produce things. And so we're in desperate need of more jobs because more and more people are going to have to be on unemployment insurance and so on and so forth. And so how do we recover from that? Well, one of the things that we're doing, it's called Saco Island Point. It's our Island Point project in Saco with our mills, is we put a post-secondary education institution in part of the mills. And one of the things I got to do as a high school student was take college courses in the mills because they had a college specifically in my town for high school students to do that. And so that's just one example. There's also, once we started to reinvigorate the mills, we have some restaurants now that are in there. We have a film studio across the river in Biddeford. The Democratic office opened up an office in one of the complexes, and we have condos being put into there by businesses. And so while it's not to where we need it yet, that could be a great structure for other mills across the state of reinvigorating a local economy by taking these vacant mills and giving them a facelift and say, hey, you know, if you put your business here, I mean, this is what we could create together. We can really market these to be kind of the central community hub that I think they should be, and they were back in the day when all the workers worked there, and then they went home to their families and were able to afford kind of life's necessities. And so while that's not the be-all, end-all solution, clearly there's not going to just be one particular thing. That could be one component to it that I see as a major issue. But when you mention, you know, that doom and gloom where it's a little bit harder to kind of a struggle for Maine people, I mean, Maine people are kind of used to that kind of harsher type environment where we're trying to work, we may have to work a little harder for what we want, but Maine people are very resilient. They can pull themselves up from the bootstraps and actually do a great day's work, and they're willing to work, but we need to provide them the opportunities to do so.
Yeah. Can you do me a favor while you're up there? Because we know you're going to get elected. I want to talk money with you too, and I want to give you an eye on time here. We have 20 minutes left.
Okay.
So I want to talk one thing, and then we're going to go to money and raising money for you, for your campaign and things like that if you need it. But let's go back for a minute. When you're elected and you're up there, can you do the Guarinos a big favor? Can you try and get rid of the slogan "From Away"?
I agree. I think that's a great idea.
Give good riddance to that, because this is the hardest place we've ever lived to fit in, and people are outright, they're like, you are from away kind of thing, and they make no bones about it. You're not from here. And I don't understand how, you know, a lot of people move around and a lot of people want to live here. But if we have a slogan that says, you know, something like it's not a statewide slogan, it's kind of the hidden one, from away. If we have something like that, that's not exactly inviting.
Right, right.
Can you do anything about that?
Well, it's not an official slogan, but I definitely see where you're coming from. I mean, I was born in Vermont, was raised up in Florida, and then went to middle school and high school in Maine. And so technically, if you really want to be specific, I'm from away. I mean, we used to vacation here a lot. But I mean, in this modern day, we cannot label people from away, because we're a mobile society. We're always on the move. We always want to find the next location, because it might be for a job, for instance. Our job might take us to a different region of the country, and that's not a fault of our own. That's just because we're searching for that American dream that we're all supposed to be owed to, right? We're supposed to be, you know, trying to reach that goal of that American dream. And so, you know, I definitely see how, you know, businesses and people in general would find offense to that from away. Like, no matter how much you are an integral part of your community, you're still plastered with that label from society. Now, I would say that's really only used in some of the kind of more seasoned individuals of our culture in Maine. A lot of the young people I see don't use that anymore. So I do think that while it shouldn't be used, I do think it's slowly but surely leaving the conversation as more and more young people are taking more leadership roles and those sorts of things, because we don't care. I mean, I could care less where you come from. The fact of the matter is, if you work hard, you're willing to put in the work, and you're willing to serve your community in some respects, I mean, I don't care where you come from, and I don't think anybody should. I mean, it gets to this idea that it shouldn't matter, you know, what color skin you have, what gender you are, what orientation you are. It shouldn't matter where you come from. Everybody should have a fair shake at an opportunity to be successful and to live a happy life, because that's really what we all want. And so I definitely agree with you. We should move away from that from away mentality.
Yeah, or, you know, or have a big Maine welcome wagon. You know, when people do move here from another place, you know, for example, we saw something the other day on TV, and we were like, wow, we've lived here for 7 years now, and we never knew about that. But it seems like everybody else does. And we don't, like, live under a rock or anything either, but it seems like it takes a longer time here to get to know everything that's here. It seems like the people that have been here for a real long time don't share that. So I wonder if there might be, like, a welcome wagon. And I think the reason why I mention that is because I think it all ties in, because people from away say, hey, I just saw this candle at this place in Maine. You should buy it. Go on the internet and buy that. And I think it all chatters around on a global way. People will order a lobster. People will order a candle or a pot or a statue or something. You know, business, just because, you know, people are physically here in Maine doesn't mean that people won't love a business that's located in Maine from away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole climate of business is changing. It's global. Just because you're in Maine doesn't mean you can't do business elsewhere.
Right, and actually this is an actual centerpiece of my campaign, is this idea of we need to promote Maine-based products, this idea of buying locally. But if you don't know about a particular Maine product, or you don't know about, you know, maybe a winter's farmer's market, we have two winter farmer's markets in Saco, two of them.
We do?
You know, and yeah, but do people outside of Saco know about it is the question.
No.
Because, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Yeah, Saco residents could utilize it, but maybe somebody in Biddeford, maybe somebody in Portland, somebody in another community might want to come down and see what we're all about. And so marketing and helping those sorts of organizations or businesses market their local Maine-produced products, I think should be a centerpiece of our economic policy in Augusta. It should be about personalizing that for people, because if we just simply let people know about what's actually already here, we actually might do ourselves a great service by helping out these like local businesses. And so, for instance, I didn't even know we had two different farmers markets. I've lived here for many years, and so I could only imagine, you know, that other people might not be aware of it. And so, you know, I don't know what necessarily the best solution to that would be. I mean, it could be really utilizing public access stations to get that information out, which I'm a big supporter of, making sure every community has a public access station, because to me that's the centerpiece of a community's democratic process, is allowing people to talk about things on TV, getting, you know, community calendars out through the TV or online. I mean, utilizing a strong web-based service.
I can't see when you're stopping, so it's radio. Oh. Go ahead.
Well, I would just to add before you continue is, you know, tapping into, you know, social networking can be a great tool, and a lot of communities haven't gone in that direction yet of really making sure, hey, we have this downtown parade. Let's let people know about it. We just had a Festival of Lights parade in Saco, and I can't tell you how many people I was telling, hey, are you going to go to the parade? And they're like, what parade? And they live in Saco, and there's a downtown Saco parade. So making sure that we give the communities and the organizations in those communities the tools necessary to effectively market their brand, effectively market their event, effectively market their products, their Maine-based products, I think is going to go a long way in terms of boosting the local economy.
Yeah, I think not assuming that people know that you're there just because you've been there forever is the mentality that needs to change, because there are so many new people here. I mean, we have a lot of new families here in Falmouth even. And, you know, trying to maneuver and tell them, you know, okay, this is where you sign up for basketball or baseball or driver's ed even, it's not out there exactly the way it should be. And it's just real interesting. So it means a little hidden. We have a whole trail system at the end of our street, right? I mean, it's a whole walking trail system. It's 5, 6, 7 miles of walking trails, and it connects throughout the whole town of Falmouth. We didn't even know about it until like 2 years ago, and we've been here for 5. That kind of thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's not obvious to people who haven't lived here forever. And so I think that might be something fun for you politically, because there's so much promotion in that. And what I was going to tell you that I do fun every year is so I get to kind of know what's in Maine. I actually order the visitor's catalog.
Mm.
I go online and order, I think it might be like visitmaine.org or something like that, but I actually order the big, thick, printed visitor's catalog to see what they're promoting outside the state of Maine so that I know what's here. Isn't
that
funny?
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we have to do because we're so clueless. Pathetic, really, but that's what I do. It comes every year, and we're thankful for it because we see new things every year that we've never seen before. And I love the way the catalog actually has the state of Maine divided into the various regions as well. So you might look at that and see if there's something to be had there. But How do we support you? It's clear that you know so much about Maine. It's clear that you love Maine, and I think it's clear that you love politics, actually, and broadcasting. So you're really fascinating to talk to and so well spoken. But how can we get involved and support you? Because you do a lot of supporting all of us, and how can we help you?
Well, if people want to know more information on my candidacy or want to help out in any way, they can go to my website, which is justinforsacco.com. And on there, there's basically a breakdown of my platform. So if any of the issues we talked about or even more, there's so many issues, we could go on and on about them, I'm sure. I kind of break down kind of an overview of my viewpoints. But I definitely want to hear from other people and definitely contact me through that web medium and let me know, hey, this is what I think about developing economic policy. Hey, my kid goes to this school. I really, you know, would like this changed. I mean, even if it's a hyper-local issue that is not something that I would necessarily deal with on the state level, I'd love to help out. I mean, that's really what should be a community-based leader is all about, helping the community. And I would definitely view my role, if I'm elected as a state representative, as a community leader, helping out community members. And so people can go on justinforsacco.com. There's information to donate to my campaign. That's always important, even though I really don't think money should be an object to winning an election. It really should be about your message. It should be about what are the substantive issues people are facing and what could be some of the solutions. And that should be the core of it, not based on political party or how much money you have. Anybody should be able to run for office. But and also people can like my page on Facebook. I mean, that's a great medium as well to communicate back and forth, which I would use as a tool to communicate effectively as a state representative. A lot of times these state representatives and state senators don't communicate online that much. They kind of leave that hanging for people. Yeah, you can email or send in mail or call, but if somebody wants to send a quick Facebook comment or Facebook message, not a lot of politicians are online that are local politicians. So I would utilize that, and they can go to Facebook.com/JustinForsacco, and you know, I'd love to hear from them, their comments, and again, we need volunteers on the campaign. One of the things that I really loved as a young person, in like 11 years old, was volunteering on my stepfather's campaign. Yeah, he was my stepdad, but I mean, anybody should be able to have that experience to participate hands-on in your democracy. It's such an invigorating experience. I remember I volunteered at the city clerk's office last year, actually, and as a poll worker, and a couple days before the election, I helped out in the office as well, and it was such a great experience because I just felt, again, I felt a part of something larger than myself. I felt a part of history in the making, and that's something that really you can't learn in a book. You can't learn in a civics class. It's something you have to experience, and as a citizen of this country, which I'm so proud to be, I really feel like it's my duty to at least do something like that and to serve my community, at least even in the smallest way, volunteering at the city clerk's office during the election, being a poll worker. I mean, just getting that opportunity, I think every young person should be able to or should do that, because it's such it puts things in perspective for you when it comes to when you're hearing these politically charged debates on TV by political pundits, or you're hearing this negativity you're hearing in Augusta, you know, it puts it in perspective that, hey, you know what? Millions of Americans have died to defend our freedoms that we enjoy, including going to the ballot box and petitioning a government for a redress of grievances. And we need to take that responsibility very strongly, because that is such an important factor in making our country and our society work moving forward and having an adequate future. I mean, our future is being gambled away, and we need to participate. Everything is affected by the policies being developed in our state capital, in our nation's capital. And once you realize that, once people kind of wake up and say, oh, crap, maybe I should turn off American Idol and research who I should vote for in the next election, because you know what? My taxes might go up based on who I vote for, or my health care might go up, or I might not be able to afford to send my kids to some sort of post-secondary education if this politician gets elected, because they want to definitely not support, you know, affordable affordable education. So what we need to do is have a dialogue, participate about your ideas, about my ideas, and just come together to put Augusta on the right path. And that's what I want to do. And again, they can go to my website, justinforsacco.com, and we can start that conversation.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what you speak to is also the entitlement issue. I mean, we aren't you know, nobody's entitled to everything. You know, you're not entitled to go to school. You're not entitled to a house. You're not entitled to anything. And
right.
we seem like being passive in politics isn't exactly the right thing unless you, you know, it seems like a lot of people who are passive in politics have entitlement things going on. You know, they're like, oh, I don't need to worry about that. You know, it is what it is. I drive this car, I work here, and I've got a great house, so I don't need to worry about that. But in truth, it's everything that you're talking about was what we're founded upon.
Exactly, and this happens time and time again, where if it doesn't affect people's pocketbooks today, they're not necessarily the most concerned about it. And the fact of the matter is we need to move away from that mentality, because we need to be concerned about what's happening in the future today, or we won't have a future to speak of. I mean, that really comes down to that. I mean, yeah, you might be fine right now, but your neighbors might not be fine. If they foreclose on their home, that's going to...
And my
right,
parents
exactly.
are a great example of not being fine. I mean, I hate it when I talk about them on the radio, but I will. I mean, my dad's been so sick, and my parents are an example of the saying, you know, you're one bankruptcy away from, you're one health issue away from bankruptcy. You know, they've through my dad's health issues, they've lost their home. So much has happened to my parents through some of the things and issues. A lot based, you know, politics is at the core. So, you know, and they're pretty, you know, they're active and they vote and all the stuff that they're supposed to do. But, you know, I do think we're becoming, I think complacent might be the right word for it, just a little bit too comfy and cozy. And we need to get out there and be more active. And I think you're just the guy for everything. For Maine, I mean, go Justin for Maine. You're going to be governor one day. You know that, right? And I know
you may not want to
be or say you don't want to be, but you probably, what do you think? Okay, we have 4 minutes left and I've opened another can of worms. What do you think you're going to do? I mean, at 20 years old, what are your goals, hopes, and dreams for your life? Or what do you see yourself doing? Or if I reach too low and you really want to be president?
No. I don't want to be a career politician. I want to get in there, hopefully advocate for people, make some changes, and get out. And my goal isn't to be in office forever. And that's what my thought process is at this point, but it may change once I get in there. But, I mean, my true passion is holding leaders accountable for their actions and inactions, what they say and what they don't say, and fighting for the interests of people on Main Street. And I could do that through a number of mediums. I don't have to be a politician to do that. You know, do that by being a journalist. I can be doing that by doing a whole host of things. But, you know, I'm very optimistic, even though I'm pessimistic about some things in terms of our policies. I'm optimistic that, you know, as long as you enjoy what you do and love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And so as long as I consistently follow my heart and try to fight for my dreams and stand up for them, no matter what my age might be, you know, I really feel like I'm going to be doing what I feel is right. And I feel like this is the next move for me that resonates with me. And if you really do have to kind of listen to yourself in your daily hustle and bustle and say, you know what, is what I'm waking up to do every day something that I love? Do I wake up and I look in the mirror and say, I cannot wait to go to work today because I'm going to knock them dead. I'm going to just do the best job I can because I love what I do. And for so many people, they can't do what they love because the circumstances are as such where they have to maybe work 3 jobs because they can't put food on the table otherwise, or they can't afford to do the things that they want to do, so they have to work different jobs. And that's really sad because I love what I do, and I can't imagine doing anything different than I currently am doing. And for many people, they can't do that. And so I don't know where I see myself, but I know as long as I follow my heart, I'm going to get there.
Yeah, and that speaks to why you're really here with us today. I know we're talking politics and having some fun with you, but you know that's the Justin I love. You know, I just appreciate you so much with everything regarding Best Ever You, because you're a shining example of exactly what you just said. I mean, it comes clear through every heart in life that you touch, that you love people, you love what you do, you're a promoter of people, a champion of causes, a champion of issues. And it's an honor to know you, and it's been fun to come across you. We met on Twitter. I hope everybody understands the power of Twitter, because we met on Twitter. It was me saying, hey, you know, I own this network in Maine. Can I come on Good Day Maine and do some things for Best Ever You? And you guys opened me with the biggest welcome arms in the world, and that speaks to you highly. So I hope, you know, even more than politics, I hope you spread that message to people, because that's so inspiring. It's who you are to be for. So, Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And I really enjoy really all that you do because, I mean, it's really, and I know we're kind of going back and forth with the compliments, but it's really important for people to kind of spread that message that, you know, we're all in this together. You know, we're one race. We're the human race. And so, and we have to kind of put that in perspective that we have to do unto others as they would do unto us. And if we spread that message of kind of love and peace, and while that might seem a little naive, if a little goes a long way. That smile to the random stranger on the street might just have made their day. And holding the door for somebody. I mean, it's those little things in life that can really make a difference from somebody. And so, whether you're doing something with your Best Ever You network, or I'm going to be trying to, you know, do something on the state level for policies or whatever we might be doing in the future, you know, as long as everybody does their part in our society, we're going to be just fine as Americans, because that American spirit of helping other people needs to be at our core. And we need to remember that when we have conversations about politics, that at the end of the day, you know, we are human and we're going to be in this together. And if we do that, we'll be fine.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to end on that note. And I thank you for being with us for the hour. And we will follow up on Twitter, probably, on Best Ever You or on besteveryou.com. And I thank you guys. Please follow Justin. Justin Chinette, everyone, and we'll follow up on the Best Ever You Network with more information and his websites. And we're out of time. So have a great day, everyone, and thank you so much, Justin.
Thank you.
Good luck with everything. Yay, go Justin. All right, take care, everybody. Have a great day.